Now we're holding on page 104 in Nedarim, beginning Perek Ve'ele Mutarin, Ois Dalid. So it contained, the Perek continues talking about the various dinim involving Nedarim, and then at the end of it mentions you can have a case where a person makes a neder, and then afterwards he explains that the lashon that he used was not actually meant to be a neder. He was kind of using a play on words. One example that the Mishnah gives is, for example, he makes a neder using the word cherem, but then afterwards he explains that actually what he meant is cherem, a net. So he's making a neder by a net, and there's no such thing. A neder means that you compare something to a korban or something else that you're able to declare off limits to you. So in principle, such a thing is not a neder. However, the Mishnah says that we should still, instead of telling him outright, especially if he's an Amoritz, instead of outright telling him that it's not a neder, pretend like it is a neder, find him some other Pesach, find some other way to be, some other grounds to be matter the neder, so that he's not careless with Nedarim, so he doesn't do these kinds of jokes in the future. Anyway, so that leads the Gemara into discussing about the importance of staying away from Nedarim. Now, we talked about the last couple of days, we've been learning about various things about that the Gemara has to say on the subject. Many times it's not appropriate to say a neder. You often have the expression, for example, that dayecha masha osur l'chatora, it's enough that the Torah asked things for you, you don't need to ask the things for yourself further. We're going to have more about it. We'll have more about it in the next perek. That it's not always a good thing to make a neder, certainly not to make frivolous ones like described in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, never be accustomed to saying nedarim, because in the end, then you're going to get careless with shvuas as well. And a shvua is much more serious. When it says in the pasuk, don't take Hashem's name in vain, because Hashem won't clean it up, that's referring more to shvuas than to nedarim, because shvuas often involve Hashem's name. A shvua is, I swear in Hashem's name, or some kinui of Hashem, that I will or I won't do such and such. A neder doesn't typically involve Hashem's name, but from Nedarim, you may come to get careless with Shavuos. A different gerusa that some of the Rishonim have is don't be accustomed to saying Nedarim, because eventually you're going to get careless with the Nedarim themselves. You're going to make a neder sometime and not fulfill it, and then you're going to be in trouble.
Isn't it forbidden to swear in Hashem's name anyway?
When you're swearing truthfully, it's actually a mitzvah to swear in Hashem's name, or Rishmoy Teshaveah. Although there is, a person has to be on a certain level. If a person is on that level, then yes, it is a mitzvah to swear in Hashem's name. The Rambam points out swearing truthfully in Hashem's name shows is giving honor to Hashem. The same way Lahavdil, we have that, for example, Yosef put on a pretense of swearing in Paro's name, so Lahavdil was swearing in Hashem's name. But you're right, it is a serious thing to do. And the penalties for doing it inappropriately are very severe, which is why over time it's developed that even in Beis Din, they try to avoid it when possible. But if nothing, they use a kinui, for example. But yeah. Anyway, continues the Braisa. Don't be too accustomed to spending time by an Amoritz and eating with him. Sooner or later, he may give you tevel to eat because he's an Amoritz. He's not necessarily so careful about Maaseiros, and he may end up giving it to you, and you're not going to realize, and you're going to eat it. In fact, there's a halacha that when a person is, when usually you have, we assume that an Amoritz is careless about such things. If a person in the Mishnah describes in Masechta Dmai, a person wants to become a Neman, someone who's trustworthy about Trumas and Maaseiros, one of the things that he has to undertake is indeed not to be a guest by an Amoretz because of these kinds of problems. Also, don't get accustomed to be eating by a Kohen who's an Amoretz. Two different gersois over here. Is it that he may give you truma because he, and you're a czar, you have no business eating truma. So now the point is, and now the Rosh explains with the previous one when we're saying don't be accustomed to eating by an Amoretz, we're talking about where you yourself are not necessarily going to realize that there might be a problem. Now though, then there could be. If you're a chover, you're going to say to yourself, so what's the problem? If the Amoretz gives me food and I don't know whether it's Maisur or not, I know the dinim of Dmai, I'll take off truma and I'll take off Maisur unobtrusively. And follow the various dinim that are described in Masechta Dmai of what to do with them, and then I'll be able to eat, no problem. The problem is we're saying that fine, but if your host is a Kohen who's an Amoritz, he may, so fine, you don't have a problem of Tevel, but you may have a problem that he's going to give you Truma and you're not going to know.
How do don't even know if the person I'm Haaretz or not. What's the definition over here of this? I'm Haaretz.
Basically, an Amoritz is someone who has not taken on himself Nemonus or Chaverus, that he hasn't taken on himself this official this official thing in front of Beis Din, that he is going to be careful with these dinim. So we do say Roiv Amir Oritz Ma'astun Hain, most Amir Oritz are careful, or were careful in those days. We're talking about with Truma and Meiser, but there was a significant minority that were not, which is why we have the whole concept of Dmai.
It's not the colloquial use where you can say Amir Oritz just meaning the guy has no knowledge.
No, so what we mean is, in other words, the point is, we're not talking about someone who deliberately goes and violates these mitzvahs. He just doesn't know better. He doesn't realize the severity of it. He thinks that you take off truma from your produce, and that's good enough. He doesn't realize that taking off Maaser Rishon and Maaser Sheni or Maaser Oni, etc., is equally as important. So again, if he's an Amar Oretz and you also are not so knowledgeable, you might end up eating tevel. Even if you are knowledgeable, then he might end up giving you truma to eat, and you're a zar. The girsa over here with Tmeya is the Ran's girsa, and the point is, even a koyin, so you're going to say, so what's the problem? If I'm a koyin and my host is a koyin, so what if he's an amoret? He gives me truma, I'm allowed to eat it. The problem is the truma might be tome, and as a koyin, you're not allowed to eat truma, that's tome. So therefore, you have to be careful of that as well. The next thing the Braisa says is, Al tar b'sichay me'isha, don't talk too much with women. Because eventually that may bring you to niuf, to znus with her. And that actually is on the surface of it, we're talking about other women, but we're talking about even a man's own wife when she's nida. You know, you have in Pirkei Avos, it applies even to a man's own wife, because then he may forget himself when she's nida. So you have to talk with her, but shouldn't be more than necessary. A person who gazes at women, eventually he is going to come to Avera, precisely that. He looks at them too much, then eventually it's going to lead him in the wrong direction. So it can be, the point is that we're saying not only it's an issur in itself, but also it can bring to a much worse issur. Yeah. Yeah, it is an issur in itself of Alois Asura Achar Levavchan V'Achar Einechem, and according to the Rambam, also there can be an issur of Lois Sikruvu Legalis Erva, because the Rambam understands that that's a mitzvah against becoming inappropriately close with an erva even short of actual niuf. Yeah.
When it says Al-Tazavir Ma'isha. The word dibur, isn't that used sometimes in context?
First of all, it doesn't. It says al tar b'sicha in Isha. It doesn't say the word dibur. Al tar b'sicha, don't do a lot of casual talk with a woman.
The word dibur is used as an euphemism for...
That's true, but that's not what we're saying over here. Okay, next. Call him stako ba keva shal isha. If he looks at a woman's heel, and a heel is normally something of hers that's covered, having le bonim she'enem muhugonim, then he's going to have children who are not erlach, because he's acting in an unsneistic way, and therefore he winds up having children who also have a lack of sneis and a lack of good midas. Rabbi Yosef over ishtei nida. So Rabbi Yosef says that's specifically talking about we're talking about if it's his own wife, but if she's nida and therefore she's off limits to him, he's not allowed to look at the parts of her body that are normally covered. And this is brought in Shulchan Aruch. Omer of Shimon Lakish, Resh Lakish gives a different explanation. Akeva de Katani Mokem HaTorif. When it says looking at her heel, actually refers to the Mokem HaTorif, to her private parts, and it's called Akeva Shumachoven Kenegeda Akev, because it's parallel to the heel. It's one's directly above the other, and sometimes, in fact, especially in those days, women would sit in a posture where their heel is fairly close to that area, which, by the way, has implications in halacha. If she finds blood over there, there's a concern that it might be Nam Nida. In any case, so on the face of it, there's actually a couple of different ways of explaining what Resh Lakish means. Is he adding to what Rabbi Yosef says, namely that Rabbi Yosef is saying you can't look at Akeva Shal Isha, at her actual heel, when she's nida. So is Resh Lakish saying no? To look at her heel when she's nida, when your own wife is a nida, is not a problem. But to look at Mokem HaTorif when she's nida, that would be a problem. Or is Resh Lakish saying it's both? Is he instead adding to what Rabbi Yosef says? With Ishta Nida, you can't even look at Akeva. And with the and in addition, there's also you can't you or is Resh Lakish saying rather that Akeva, the heel, would be also by any woman. And then Mokem HaTorif would be also we're saying over here that if he looks at her, having le bonim shein muhuganim, so we're saying, but that would be specifically if he looks at that area. Look, the Ravid actually, the Ravid has a sefer called Balei HaNefesh, where he it's a sefer on Hilchos Nida. It also has halachas of tznius between husband and wife. So he discusses this. So the Maaseh, he says that so in practice, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch in both senses that to look at the mokam aturif, we're saying would be sorry, I said it wrong. One explanation, the way the Ravid explains it, is that he's saying you should never look at the mokam aturif, whether she's tahor or not. Even when your own wife is tahor, don't be looking at that area. And then in addition, we'd have what Rabbi Yosef is saying, when she's nida, then even to look at her heel or other normally parts or covered parts of her body is off limits. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings both of those things. So to look at the makom haturif in general, a person is not supposed to do. And then in addition, also, as far as halacha, when she's nida, then he's taka also to look at any parts of her body that are usually covered. Torah literally means it has a few different meanings. One of them is it means embarrassment, the place of embarrassment or shame. Sometimes the word Torah also means something exposed, but here obviously it doesn't mean that because if I care, it's kept covered. But yeah, Vitanya, and we learn in a Braisa, the pasuk says Vavur Tia Yir Ose Al Pneichem. The pasuk says that Hashem Moshe says to the Jewish people, Hashem had you go through the entire experience of Matan Torah to see the Shechina and to be frightened in order that His fear should be on your face. So what does it mean that His fear should be on your face? Zubusha, this means the sense of shame. A yid is naturally, as we've learned before, rachmonim by shonim goyim lechasadim. So this is one part of that is busha, the fact that a person has the ability to feel shame. And we don't mean, by the way, the shame that a person would feel when people find out about the negative things he's doing. We're talking about a higher kind, the kind that talks about all over in Tanya, based on the Zohar, called yira boshes, where a person would be ashamed to do something wrong knowing that Hashem is watching him. So the pasuk is saying that that's an important thing. Moshe is telling the Jewish people, that's why Hashem had you go through the whole experience of Matan Torah. So this directly connects with what we were just saying, that he shouldn't be looking at Mokam HaTorah because that shows a lack of busha.
Is that embarrassment to do in front of Hashem? It's embarrassment, right, for him.
Right, well, so what we're saying is both. So it means, therefore, he shouldn't be looking at certain parts of his wife. We're talking about the Mokam HaTorah. And Bechlal, it means that as of here, the Gemara is going to go and talk about various details about Tashmish. A person should realize, even at that time, then the Eibishter is watching him and he should feel a sense of busha and do it in a tzniyistic way. Someplace or other, I read an interesting vote in this connection. Back some 60 years ago or so in the 1960s, they were trying to do a survey of American Jewry to figure out how many people are frum. How many frum Jews are there in America? Well, how are you going to determine what's frum? So what's Shomer Torah or Mitzvahs? So their first thought was Shabbos. It's a very obvious public marker of being a frum yid. Then the researchers thought it over or discussed it with whatever, with Rabbanim. I don't know what they did exactly. They came to the conclusion that actually a more accurate way would be to see who's careful with Taras and Mishpacha. On the theory, they figured, a people who are not so in tune with the Eibishter, people who are not so in tune with the Yiddishkeit, are going to say, wait a minute, this is something private between my spouse and me. What is Hashem interfering with that? Whereas a people who have a sense of Yiras Shemayim are going to say just the opposite. Such a personal thing, the ultimate closeness between myself and my wife, how could Hashem be absent from such a thing? So that fits very well with our Gemara over here. All right. The pasuk continues, Levilti Sechato. Moshe tells them that this way you'll have Yira of Hashem on your face so that you don't sin. Malamed Shabushim Mevila De Yirashet. This teaches us that having a sense of shame brings a person to be afraid of sin. Because exactly that, if he'll be embarrassed to do an Aveda knowing that Hashem is watching him. Mikan Omru, based on this, the Chacham said, Simen Yofel Adam Sheheh Baishan. It's a good simen for a person that he has that sense of shame. Acherim Omer, and Acherim, which is usually Reb Meir, says further, a person who has that sense of shame is not going to sin so quickly, precisely that, because he realizes that he's always in the presence of Hashem. And on the contrary, if he doesn't have Boshas upon him, be a duah shalomdu a voice of Al Har Sinai, you can be sure that his ancestors didn't stand there by Har Sinai to receive the Torah, because if Moshe is telling them that from now on, from Matan Torah and onward, forever, Hashem has put a sense of Yira and a sense of Busha into you, so if a person lacks that, then it shows that he's not actually descended from the Jews who were there by Matan Torah. Now, Marshall points out this is as far as midos. On the other hand, when it comes to learning, faket loy habayi shalomet, as it says in Pirkei Avos, a person who is too shamefaced is not going to learn well because he's going to be afraid to ask questions. So in fact, Marashah says, you have this Gemara in Beitza that says that Hashem gave us Jewish people the Torah specifically out of all the other nations because we're Azin. So what does that mean? It means both. In terms of learning, we don't have that sense of busha. We're Azin, we're brazen and shameless in terms of that we have no problem asking as many questions as necessary to clarify the point. And then it also means, on the other hand, that the Torah controls our natural azus as far as midas, so that we become more decent people. And as the Gemara says over there, if it weren't for that, nobody would be able to tolerate us because our azus would just be too much for the world.
Yeah.
It's
good for the Magid Shir also. He learns more by expanding to the students.
This is also true, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues on this topic of intimacy between husband and wife. I guess it's a good thing all of us here are married or are married or formerly married men. Omer Rabbi Yechon ben Dehavai. Dalad dvarim socholi malachi asharis. The malachi asharis told me the following four things, and we're going to talk about soon whether we mean actual malachi asharis or whether it has another meaning. Anyway, he says, first thing, chigrim mipnei mahavyan. Why are some people lame? They can't walk properly on their feet. And the reason is mipnei shahoifchim es shulchanam, because they, to use a euphemism, turn over their table during tashmish. Now, there's two major explanations among the Meforshim here what Hoifchen Shochanan means. One is that they have relations, the man facing towards the woman and she facing away from him. So like she's on her hands and knees. So therefore, the idea would be that the two of them are using their legs and their knees improperly, and therefore it ends up from that people become lame. There's also different explanations. Does this mean that this kind of thing has an effect on the baby, that it can cause the baby to be born lame? Or does it mean it has an effect on the couple themselves? They're the ones who are acting inappropriately, and therefore they themselves. Obviously, it also doesn't mean every single person who is lame is because of this, but we're saying that's one possible reason. Anyway, so one explanation of Hoifchem, so there's actually a few explanations of Hoifchem as Shochanam. So one is like that it's the man facing the woman and him and she facing away from him. Another explanation is that's Bia Shaloi Kedarka. And a third one is that it's the woman on top and the man underneath. In all cases, the idea is, again, that they're using their legs in an improper way, and therefore Rabbi Yechon ben Dehavai says the Malachi Asher has told him that the result is that people become lame. The second one, ilmim mipnei mahavyan, why are some people mute and unable to speak? Because they kiss the oisim mokim, which is what we called before mokim atodif. So they use their mouth improperly, and therefore they or their children, as the case may be, end up having speech defects. Cherishim mipnei mahavyan, why are people deaf? And cherish in Gemara terminology usually means that deaf mute, they can't hear and they can't speak. So the reason is tashmish, because they talk during tashmish, and therefore, so their chet involves speaking and hearing. Now, the Gemara is going to point out soon that that doesn't mean that tashmish has to take place in silence. We'll get back to that point soon. But in any case, then he continues. The fourth one, sumen mipnei mahavyan, why are some people blind? Because they look at oisei mokem, which we said before, a person is not supposed to look at, and here they do, and therefore they're doing wrong with their eyes. Well, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction about all of that. The Shalom is Ima Shalom. They asked Ima Shalom. She was the sister of Rabbi Gamliel, and she was the wife of Rabbi Eliezer. The Ritva, by the way, explains that Ima was not actually part of her name. Ima is a title that we often find in the Gemara, approximately like Mrs. or Rebbetzin or that, her actual name was Shalom. You would think that seems rather unusual, Shalom as a girl's name, but they've actually found documents from among the Dead Sea Scrolls or in that general part of the world. They found documents from that period where they actually found at least one that mentions a woman named Shalom. So apparently it used to be a woman's name. Even nowadays, you know, you have names that are shared by both boys and girls. I remember a few years back here in Crown Heights, there was a couple that got married where both of them were named Simcha. So they asked Ima Shalom, why are your children so exceptionally beautiful? Omer Lahen, she explains to them about how Rabbi Eliezer would go about with Tashmish with her. She says, "Eina misapu imi lo b'tchilas alayla v'lo b'seif alayla." He wouldn't misapu with me, which is is a euphemism for having relations. Literally, misapu means to converse. And that's part of the question. If we're saying that you're supposed to converse, the very fact that we use, the Bach explains, the very fact that we're using Masaper as a euphemism implies that there's supposed to be conversation involved. So what is Reb Yochanan ben Da'avai saying that there shouldn't be? But also, even if you say that it's not a euphemism for the actual act, it means, in other words, that he's actually talking with her as she's going to go on to describe. So he doesn't do it at the beginning of the night or at the end of the night. Only in the middle of the night. A lot of these things that she's describing over here are not necessarily things that are actually required al pi halacha. The poskim bring them, but many of the poskim point out that a lot of the details that we're going to say over here about what Rabbi Eliezer would do are only midas chasidus. Famously, by the way, it's known the Gerer Rebbeim were particularly machmir with these kinds of things in Torah, and then some of the, I don't know how many of the Chassidim do, but officially it's a big thing in Gerer Chassidus to be careful with these kinds of things, but in the wider Jewish world, not so much. Anyway. So why not at the beginning of the night, at the end of the night? There's a number of reasons for it. One reason is, so the Ran brings one, the basic reason is because at the beginning of the night, people are still out and about in the streets. So you're going to hear them, and as the Gemara is going to go on to say, then the husband or the wife may be thinking of other people, and that's bad. And at the end of the night also, sometimes you have, people are starting to get up early and walk around in the street, and then he's going to be thinking about them, as opposed to in the middle of the night, everybody's asleep. There's a number of other reasons given. The Kesef Mishnah and Rambam brings an interesting point that at the beginning of the night, a person has just finished eating, so therefore, like, their stomach is still full, and therefore, like, it's going to have a bad effect on the Zera. And at the end of the night, they're hungry, and also it's not going to be so good for any child that would be conceived then, whereas the middle of the night, you've eaten well, but now you've already fairly well digested your food, but your stomach is still reasonably full, so therefore it's the healthiest time. Al pi Kabbalah, there's points that the middle of the night is best because the time of Eis Rotz and Lamaila, etc. She continues, Uchshu Mesaper, when we're having relations, Megala Tefach Omachasa Tefach. He uncovers a Tefach and covers a Tefach. Now here also, there's a lot of different explanations what that means. The Ran brings one meaning of like this. The Gemara mentions in Brachos that even when a person is going to the bathroom, they're supposed to be tzniistic about it and not uncover more of their body than necessary. So in particular, it mentions over there that a woman uncovers two tfachim so the urine doesn't get on her clothes. So now we're saying of those two tfachim, he would uncover only one tefach. There's many, many other explanations, including something related to that, and a number of the Mefoshim say that it means that they would actually be mostly dressed during the act, and they would and only uncover the appropriate parts, which gets into a whole discussion, because the Gemara elsewhere mentions you're not supposed to do that. The Gemara elsewhere mentions part of a husband's obligations towards his wife is that there should be kiruv basar, there should be skin-to-skin contact. So there's a lot of discussion about that. Maybe it means over here because both of them agree to it, so therefore it's allowed. Maybe it means that it's not. Maybe it means they're not completely dressed, but that they're wearing certain items of clothing, etc. B'chlal, there's different things about it. It's brought in different places. In one place, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sonei hamashamish orum, that Hashem dislikes somebody who has relations undressed. But in another place, it says that the Zohar especially says that you should be covered. So the general understanding of the poskim is that there should be, they shouldn't necessarily be wearing anything, but they should be covered with a blanket from above. In any case, so there's that. There's different other explanations of Megala Tefach or Machasa Tefach in terms of how he would actually do this, in terms of how they would actually have Tashmish. Anyway, she says, V'doyma Olav K'misha K'foy Shed. He acted in a way as though he's been forced by a shed. So like he's hurrying up as though he's been, as long as like shed is forcing him. So, and again, here also, there are various explanations among the Mefoshim what exactly it means. The point is, though, that she's using the expression misaper, that shehu misaper, when he's talking with her, which implies there should be talking in connection with Tashmish. And here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Da'avai was saying that there should not be, and it can cause, cause problems for the couple or for their children. A different explanation of Doyma Kafish for his shed, by the way, is that he's having Tashmish, but he's doing it only purely for the mitzvah and not in order to have any hana from it, again, as though like he's being forced by a shed and therefore it's just like something to get over with, sort of. For Amautiloi, Mata. Now, the Ravid in that Sefer Balei HaNefesh that I mentioned before, he brings up the point. Doesn't the Gemara elsewhere say that Adrabba, it's a good thing to, for a couple, for a husband to take his time over it in order to satisfy his wife? So he says, basically, it all depends on what the person is. It all depends on the person's motivations, what he's doing. L'shem Shemayim, if he's taking his time in order to satisfy her and make her happy, that's a good thing in itself. If you have someone like, if you have someone like Rabbi Eliezer, who instead, his way of doing it l'shem Shemayim is, as we're saying over here, to do as quickly as possible, and his wife is also fine with that, which obviously she was, because she's telling over people that this is why we have such beautiful children, then that's also fine. So it really depends on the individual person, what where he's holding in his where he's holding in terms of his relationship with the Eibishter. Anyway, so if Amarti loy matam, so Ima Shalom says, so I asked Rabbi Eliezer, why are you doing all these things? But Amali says, Kadesh le etin es enai bi isha acheres. So I don't go and start thinking about other women. V'nimtzu bonav boin l'dei mamzerus. And if I were to, then my children, then the children would be coming to mamzerus. Not literally mamzerus. They wouldn't be lahalocha mamzerim, but nevertheless, they would be, as the Gemara had used the expression before, enim muhugonim, not erlocha people. And he didn't want that. He wanted his children to be the best they could. B'gashmiyus v'ruchnius, which is why he did all these particular all these particular behaviors when he was having relations with his wife. Anyway, again, the question is that we see that she's describing that he's talking with her, and Bechlal, the fact that she uses Misaper as a euphemism for Tashmish in the first place involves that there's implies that there's conversation involved, and here Rabbi Yechon ben Davai is saying that there shouldn't. So the answer is like Kasha, Haba Mili to Tashmish, Haba Mili Achranaisa. Depends whether we're talking about things related to Tashmish or other things. Things related to Tashmish, to get her in the mood, for example, yeah, by all means, that's a good thing to do, and that's what Rabbi Eliezer is doing. But other unrelated talk is not appropriate at that time. Because chametz, I guess, is in a way similar. Actually, it's interesting that if I remember correctly, the Zohar says that the actual that all of the sipur, all of the conversation that we're talking about over here, should be beforehand. But then, when it comes to the actual act itself, it should be in silence. And the Zohar compares it to the way the Kohen Gadol would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and there's no he doesn't say anything in there. He brings the Torah without making a sound. So that would be another way of reconciling this, is the difference between before the Tashmish to put her in a good mood and make her happy versus doing it. Again, a lot of these things are midas chasidus, and whether they apply to an individual couple is really something that a person has to discuss with their chassan and kala teacher, respectively, what people have to discuss with their chassanim and kala teachers, respectively, or with their mashpiyim in later years. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Tfilah Tzara was after he left the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Mispal Tfilah Tzara b'Bayis HaChitzen, okay. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zu Divrei Yochanan ben Dehavai. Everything that we said so far is about the four things that shouldn't be done during Tashmish and that they can cause problems for the couple or for their children. That's according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Dehavai. Aval Amaru Chachamim Ein Halacha Ke Yochanan ben Dehavai. But the other Chachamim disagreed and said the halacha is not like Yochanan ben Dehavai. Ella, they say, kol masha adam roitza lasis b'ishtoi oisa. Whatever the husband wants to do with his wife when it comes to Tashmish, he can do. Now, there is a machloikas rishonim. Do the Chachamim mean to disagree with Rabbi Yochanan ben Dehavai about all four things, or only about the one as far as hoifchem es shochanam? So there are a number of Rishonim who say that they disagree as far as Hoifchem as Chochonim, as the Gemara is going to go and give a couple of examples now. So however we define, we said before, three definitions of what that means in terms of positions or in terms of Kedarka, Shalei Kedarka, whatever. But many Rishonim hold that the Chachamim agree with him about the other three things as far as Menashkim Oisimokim and looking at it and Mesaper Meshas Tashmetz, the Chachamim would agree that those things should not be done. So that's the Gemara is going to point out soon, that Malachim know how babies are formed in the womb, and therefore they're able, they have an insight into it that regular people might not. But the Gemara is going to point out then in that case how the Chacham, how can the Chacham argue with such experience? So that's, we'll get to that in a couple of lines, yeah. Anyway, so the Chachamim continue. Moshal Bosar Abami Beis HaTabach. Consider, like, for example, you have a piece of... Now, the Rambam in particular holds, the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Yisurei Bia, or Hilchos Ishus, I forget which, he says that He says that actually the Chachamim are disagreeing with Rabbi Yechon ben Dahavai on all four things. So therefore, according to the, and since the halacha, the pashtus would be like the Chachamim, that would mean that all four of the things the Gemara mentioned before are allowed al pi halacha, provided that Amram says a person does have to be careful not to be motzi zera l'batala. Even by the way, when we talked about before, one possible definition of hoifchemas shochanan might mean bia shalei kadarka, there is considerable discussion among the Rishonim to what extent would such a thing be mutter. In Yevamos, the Gemara tells us that according to one opinion, that was what Er and Onan did, and they got misa b'dei shemayim for it. So there's different explanations, including that maybe, in fact, Tosfos says over there, a person might be allowed it, but only once in his entire lifetime. Like just to have the experience, but then not again, and a person would have to be careful also not to be motzi zera l'batala in that. So yeah, it's basically not so simple. Anyway, so the Chum say moshal abasa abomi beis atabach. It's like when you bring a piece of meat home from the butcher shop. Rotzel oichle b'melach oichle. You want to eat it with salt, you can eat it. Tzoli oichle. If you want to instead roast it, not just salt it and eat it as raw as steak tartar or whatever. So if you wanted to just salt it and eat it basically raw like steak tartar, you could do that. Sli, if you want to roast it, oichle. Mavushol oichle. You could cook it. Sholuk, you could overcook it, oichle. So the same way, a husband and wife can do whatever they want together according to the Chachamim, or at least they can do Hafichas Shulchan according to some Rishonim, and there's no issue with it. Similarly, when you bring a fish home from the fishmonger, from the fish catcher, the same kind of thing, you can prepare the fish however you like. Why the comparison both to meat and to fish? So there's a one of the Masechtas Ketanis is called Masechta Kala Rabsi. You actually have there's a Masechta Kala, which is a short one, and then you have a longer one called Kala Rabsi. And in that one, it explains the vote is because after all, with meat, you do have certain limitations. You can't eat it with milk, after all. As opposed to fish, there's much less limitation. Strictly a pi'alocha, you're allowed to eat fish with milk. Some of the poskim don't like the idea, but because they learn based on a Gemara and Pesachim that it's not good for your health. But in any case, there's no actual strict issur against it. So therefore, that's why the second comparison to fish, meaning in other words, that you have much more leeway.
On Shabbos, you have fish and meat, and that's the best time to do everything is Friday night.
This is also true. This is also true, yeah. Omer Amemar, so now Amemar says, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Dahavai had said that he heard this from Malachi Ashoris, man Malachi Ashoris Rabbonon. What do we mean by Malachi Ashoris? We actually mean the Chachamim. De'itema Malachi Ashoris Mamash, if you can say he heard it from actual Malachi Ashoris, Amai Omer Rabbi Yochanan ain't halacha ki Yochanan ben Dahavai, then how could Rabbi Yochanan say the halacha is not like him? Ho'inu b'ki b'tzuras avlad tvei. Aren't the Malachi Ashoris much more familiar with how a baby is formed in the womb, and they have insight that the Chachamim do not necessarily, about what kind of things can cause birth defects, like he was describing before? So obviously that means it must be that Rabbi Yochanan ben Dahavai heard it from the Chachamim of his generation. So why are we calling them Malachi Ashoris? Dimitzaini k'Malachi Ashoris, because the Talmidei Chachamim are distinguished with their clothing like the Malachi Ashoris. They wear a different type of clothing. They dress and conduct themselves in a different way than the common run of people. The Rambam brings an expression in Hilchos Deis that the same way as a Chacham is recognizable by his Chachma, so he's recognizable by his care in dress and speech and deportment and so on and so forth. And the Rambam refers over here, you know, the same way as we say in the Haggadah, Melamed Shal Yisrael Mitzuyonim Sham, that the Jewish people were distinguished from the Mitzvim in the way they acted, and they never assimilated, and to a certain extent they assimilated, but whatever, they never were confusable with the Mitzvim because they dressed and behaved differently. The same way a Talmid Chacham is distinguished from the general run of people.
Clothes and language.
So there's actually different opinions. The most famous one that everybody's familiar with is that they didn't change their clothes, their language, and their names. But there are actually different gersois about it. A medrash actually gives a different list that they never intermarried with the mitzvim, and they never had relations with them, that they never mastered on each other to the mitzvim. The idea in particular that they didn't change their clothes, the earliest written source there seems to be for it is from the times of the Rishonim. Apparently that was their girsa in the Medrash. The Ritva brings it in his commentary on the Haggadah, and there's a few other early sources like that. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Hahidas soy lekame de Rebbe. A woman once came to Rebbe with a shayla. Omalei, she says, Rebbe, orachti lo shulchan v'hafachai. I prepared him the table, and he turned it over, which is a euphemistic way of saying that I was ready to have relations with him in the normal position, and he overturned it. He did hafachas shulchanai according to any of the different explanations that we said before. So basically, we're not talking about that the husband forced her into it, but we have to understand that she was willing to go along with it, but now afterwards she's second-guessing herself and wondering, should we have done this? So Rebbe tells her, Biti, Torda hitiratach. Look, the Torda is matir, this kind of thing. Vani ma esalich. So what do you want me to do? I'm not gonna go and overrule what it says in the Torda. Where do we see the Torda is matir such a thing? So the Ran explains, because since the Pasuk says, ki yikach ish isha, a man marries a woman, and it doesn't say any limitations over there about what they can do, then the implication is that they can do anything they want together. Again, as we said before, the Ran brings from the Rambam, or as long as he's not moitzi shichvas zera lavatala. The Marsha brings a different explanation. The Gemara learns in a number of places, b'chlal, so we have the concept of bia kadarka and shaloi kadarka. How do we know, for almost all purposes in halacha, those have the same effect? For example, as far as a yavam and yavama, yibum has been accomplished, whether it was kadarka or shaloi kadarka. As far as arayas, there's misas beistin or kores or achatas, regardless of which one. For most purposes in halacha, they're treated as identical. Where do we learn that from? Because there's a pasuk that speaks about two males together, and it uses the word mishkevei isha, the lyings of a woman. So we understand that there are two ways for a husband and wife that are two ways that they can have relations, both of which are considered relations in halacha. So now, therefore, Marashah says, so Rebbe is telling her, in effect, the Torah, in effect, is being makir both of those when it comes between a husband and a wife. So such a thing is mutter, and therefore I'm not going to say anything against that. Similarly, there was a woman who came to Rav with a similar shayla. How is it any different than a fish? Like we said before, a person brings a fish home from the store and he can prepare it however he wants. The same way, you and your husband agreed, and it's acceptable to both of you to use whatever position you want. So then I'm not going to interfere. Okay. Now, the Gemara continues. The Pasuk says, "V'lo yisasuru achrei levavchem." You shouldn't go astray after your heart. So in other words, a person has to control himself and not just go after whatever thoughts he's thinking. Mikan omer Rebbe. So based on this, Rebbe explained, al yishta odim b'kois zev yitin einov b'kois achar, that a man should not be euphemistically drinking out of one cup and having in mind a different one, meaning to have relations with one woman while thinking about a different one. So we said before, that's why Rabbi Eliezer would dafka to have tashmish in the middle of the night, so that way, for one thing, because then nobody's around in the streets and he's less likely to be thinking of other people. So Marsha points out, we have in the pasuk, you have the heart and you have the eyes. And here also, we're saying, and v'yitin einav, that he's going to put his eyes on kois achar, because we know those two are sasuri avera. Those two are the great middlemen as far as avera. A person thinks of something with his heart and sees it with his eyes, and he's off to the races. And then you have, why is this in the parasha of Tzitzis? Because there's a story in Gemara Menachos where there was a yid, a Talmud of Reb Chiyo, was actually saved from a serious avera of being mezana with a notorious zoyna over there by his Tzitzis slapped him in the face. So we see that Tzitzis are a great getter against this kind of thing. And in fact, Marashah says, this is one we said before, that we're about the Chachamim being called, the Talmud Chachamim being called Malachi Asharis. That's one point, because they wear their tzitzis publicly. So therefore, that's another way in which they're like the Malachi Asharis. And therefore, we're saying they're the ones who are very well equipped to tell us to be careful about matters of arayas. Anyway, Omer Avina. So Omer Avina, lo nitzrucha elad afila beiz noshav. The chiddush of that is, even we're talking a man has two wives before Chayim Deh Ben Gershim. So it's one thing. In other words, there's less of a chiddush if he's having relations with his wife and thinking of some other unrelated woman. But even Ravina is saying, even he has two wives and he's with one while thinking about the other, that also is included in lo yisasuru achrei levavchem. Famously, you have the question, what about Yaakov with Rachel and Leah? He was with Leah that first night and he thought he was with Rachel. And in fact, the Gemara is going to say in a minute now that people, that children born from such relations are not always such good people. So there's a couple of different explanations about that. But one, the Magen Avraham brings an explanation on there's two places in Shulchan Aruch, by the way, where all these dinim are discussed. One is in Orach Chaim at the end of the halacha, at the end of the halachas of the day. You have the halachas of Ma'ariv and Kriyas Shema Shalamita, and then you have the halachas of Tashmish, and then you have also an Eved Ezer in connection with the halachas of Peruvul. Anyway. So the Magen Avraham, where it's brought in Orach Chaim and Siman Reish Mem, he explains that in that case, what we're dealing with over here is where he intends to be with a different woman. Basically, here Yaakov saw this woman. He thought her name was Rachel, but the one he sees is the one that he intends to have relations with. So therefore, that's not considered a problem. The fact that he didn't know that her actual name is Leah rather than Rachel. So we'll continue tomorrow on this topic, Be'ez Hashem, of proper and improper behavior during Tashmish and what effect it has on the couple themselves and on the children. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gula, Vav Shvat. The Rebbe was talking in Tafshin and Aleph. It's at the end of this period. There's no question. There's not even a shadow of a doubt. That's already Zman Ha'Gula. As Chazal say, Kolu Kola Kitzin, all the Kitzim have ended. And really, I think I've mentioned before that literally, in the sense, I don't think there's any ketz that we can find in any sefer later than our date now, Tufshin Pei Hei. The last ketz that I know of that was brought in any sefer was from like Tufshin Nun or so, except for the year 6000, but that's another matter. Anyway, also the matter of tshuva has already been, now the Gemara does tell us that Ein Adavar Toloi Ela B'Tshuva, the whole matter depends on the Jewish people doing Tshuva. But the Rebbe points out that's also been accomplished with Shlemus, including the Shlemus that you have where the Zohar says that the Mashiach will come to bring the Tzaddikim back in Tshuva. There is a spark of Mashiach within every Yid, and from that point of view, every Yid is in the process of doing Tshuva, and therefore in that sense, even that prerequisite for Mashiach coming has already been accomplished. Okay, continuing on halachas of Shabbos, talking about medicines and medicinal treatments and all on Shabbos. So if a person has injured his hand or his foot, so he can put it he can put it in wine or in alcohol to stop the bleeding, but not in vinegar, because vinegar is stronger, and that's already considered something curative. If the person now then you have a person who's very sensitive, and for him even wine or alcohol would be also as well. Now on the other hand, if it's on the back of the hand or on the top of the foot, or if it was metal, that's different, because then you have problems, then you have potential problems with tetanus. So then already that's already considered something dangerous, and that's already then you have different dinim. Then you can do whatever it takes to stop the bleeding on Shabbos, because you have large veins over there where the person's that you could have tremendous amount of bleeding. You could have tetanus or whatever. So there you have other matters. Then you have a din. A person has an eye ache. So there might be one thing you might want to do is put on it some saliva. In particular, tasteless saliva of the kind before a person ate anything that day. Interestingly, that mention of tasteless saliva also came up in today's Daf Yomi in a different context. But that kind of thing is obviously for refuah, so therefore you can't do that on Shabbos. But if a person, let's say, has an eye infection and he can't open his eyes, then he's allowed to moisten them a little bit with some saliva just in order to open his eyes, and then now he's going to want to take eye drops in order to get rid of the infection. That's another matter, and that's not necessarily. So the truth is, things involving eyes, actually, the Gemara says, are considered a little more serious, and therefore there's grounds to be able to take eye drops or whatever on Shabbos. But here we're talking about where it's not really an eye infection. We're just talking about like his eyes are sore or something, and they're crusted shut. So again, he can use a little saliva to moisten them so he can open his eyelids, but not to actually do anything else, because that would be refuah on Shabbos. We're not talking. You can do, if you have plain water, you can do that also. Mistama, I guess where the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was, you didn't necessarily always have a sink or running water to hand, but yeah, it amounts to the same thing.
Germs.
And then one more din in this connection. A person has an upset stomach. He ate too much. He is allowed to stick his finger in his throat to make himself throw up, but not to take Ipecac or something like that to make him throw up. That wouldn't be allowed on Shabbos.
Pepto-Bismol.